Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, what was the name of the first father-daughter song to hit number one on the U.S. singles chart? Was it A, Handprints on the Wall? Was it B, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? Was it C, Hello, Mudda, Hello, Fada? Or was it D, Something Stupid? What was the name of that father-daughter number one song anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1980 that a New Jersey state assemblyman introduced a resolution to make a Bruce Springsteen song the official state song of New Jersey. Which song was that anyway? Was it A, Dancing in the Dark? Was it B, Born in the USA? Was it C, My Hometown? Or was it D, Born to Run? So, what was the name of that Springsteen song recommended to be the official state song of New Jersey? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April 14th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1958, that Van Cliburn won the International Tchaikovsky Piano Competition. That was 1958 today. And it was 24 years ago today, 1999, that Shania Twain became the first woman to be named as Songwriter Artist of the Year by the Nashville Songwriters Association International. 1999, today. Smokey Robinson's 1979 hit Cruisin' introduces our R&B music news. It's titled Last Word. This is written by Andy Green in Rolling Stone magazine, April 2023 issue. Smokey Robinson on meeting MLK, missing old friends, and why he'll never retire. The Motown legend's new album, Gasms, is out April 28th. What music still moves you the most? Oh, I listen to everything. I heard a great dose of music growing up. I heard everything from classical like Bach, Beethoven, and Chopin to gospel, jazz, and blues. So many Motown greats are no longer with us, and most of them were your good friends. How do you get over losses like that? Because you have to. Man, we have the Motown Museum in Detroit. When I go back there, man, I walk through the building and I look at those pictures. 80% of those people are gone. We grew up together. We were all brothers and sisters. We hung out at Hitsville, man. This had picnics, went to each other's homes. We bowled and played chess and checkers and ping pong and ball and football. And to see those people passing on, it's always a rough emotion. What are the secrets of living a long life? There's no secret. If there was a secret to longevity, man, you can believe somebody would have bottled it up by now and made a fortune. I'm sure your fitness routine helps. Tell me about it. Well, I get up every morning, and the first thing I do is stretch my body for about 45 minutes. I've been doing yoga for 40 years, and then I do a workout. Try to eat right, never been the party person. Come 11 or 12 o'clock at night, I'm sleepy. You dealt with drug addiction in the 1980s. What did you learn from that? Not to do it again. I speak at rehabs and see people there who are 20 years old. They've been doing drugs for 10 years. I was a walking corpse after 2 years messing with that cocaine. Thank God it was before crack. Will there ever be a biopic about your life? Well, we're in the process of doing that now. We're just finishing up the script. The Miracles toured the Deep South when Jim Crow was still the law of the land. What was that like for you? Well, I grew up in Michigan, and I've come to find out Michigan was the main headquarters above the Mason-Dixon line for the Ku Klux Klan. But it was just a little more subtle there. When we went to the South, it was much more blatant. You can't even go to the bathroom. We've been shot at for trying to go to the bathroom. What role do you think Motown played in the civil rights movement? Dr. Martin Luther King came to Motown one time. He said, "You guys are doing with music what I'm trying to do legally and politically." After about a year or so of making Motown music, we would go down south and see white boys with black girlfriends and black boys with white girlfriends. The music brought them together. Are you able to understand how the country that elected Barack Obama twice voted Donald Trump into office? Well, I've known Trump for 30 years. I've played golf with him. Donald Trump is a narcissist. I don't understand why he's not in jail after the insurrection at the Capitol. I think people who are going to vote for him are desperate. The powers that be in the Republican Party are desperate, too. Do you ever see the day in which you retire? Not anymore, man. I've tried it one time. After I left the Miracles, I was vice president of Motown. But after 3 years or so, I was so miserable inside. Berry Gordy told me to get out. He said, "Go make a record, man, because you're miserable." Finally, how would you like to be remembered? I want to be both Beethoven. I want to be Chopin. I want them to be playing my music 500 years from now. Smokey Robinson. Kisses Rock and Roll All Night introduces our music research and technology article. It's titled The Midnight Special. Having changed music on TV brings classic clips to YouTube. This is written by Stephen Battaglio, LA Times, on the 5th of April, 2023. Through the first few decades of television, the last piece of music late night viewers heard was the Star Spangled Banner, before a station signed off. That changed thanks in large part to Bert Sugarman, an independent producer of game shows, music specials, and eventually movies. who believed people would stay up after Johnny Carson's Tonight Show if there were something to actually watch. He proved it 50 years ago when he launched NBC Friday Night Music Series, The Midnight Special, that featured dozens of major rock, pop, country, and soul acts of the 1970s. Sugarman's Vault offers a bounty of enduring artists, including Kiss, playing in the background right now. Fleetwood Mac, Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt, Elton John, Tina Turner, Led Zeppelin, Aretha Franklin, Johnny Cash, Sly and the Family Stone, Todd Rundgren, ELO, The Spinners, Heart, and Donna Summer all performed live on the show throughout the years, along with top comedians such as Steve Martin and Richard Pryor. Sugarman, now 84, knew his weekly program was worth preserving, along with the contracts that gave him control over the rights. After making the performances available on cable network VH1 and on DVDs over the decades, he's finally brought them online to a dedicated YouTube channel he introduced last month. Many of the artists, both domestically and internationally, played all types of venues, including arenas and stadiums. Sugarman said it felt like the right time to introduce new audiences to the show. Sugarman has added clips each week to the YouTube channel and promises entire 90-minute shows as well. The Midnight Special was part of a mini-wave of late-night rock music TV shows in the early 1970s that also included ABC's In Concert and the syndicated Don Kirshner's Rock Concert. While network TV executives were wary of the music and the drug culture surrounding it at the time, they could still count. They saw the drawing power of rock festivals and concerts that proliferated after Woodstock. The shows came along in the three-network era, preceding the emergence of cable and MTV when choices for watching music on TV were slim. Fans had to settle for Dick Clark's American Bandstand on ABC and the syndicated Soul Train, which both featured artists lip-syncing their hit records. Linda Ronstadt said on some shows you would have to follow plate twirlers or an act with an orangutan. But Ronstadt's biggest complaint about TV was how the music sounded. The shows made their own arrangements and loaded it up with lard, she said. Your audio and video were totally out of your control. Sugarman addressed that concern by creating a show where acts played live with their own instruments and arrangements in a concert-like setting. He was convinced young people coming home from a Friday night out would stay up for it. In 1972, he brought the idea to executives at NBC, who scoffed at first. They said, you know these rock and roll people, they're full of drugs. They're not going to show up, and it'll just be a waste of money, Sugarman recalled. So I said, well, what if I pay for it? Along with picking up the tab for the production, Sugarman also promised the artist on the program would promote voter registration, as the voting age was lowered from 21 to 18 before the 1972 presidential election. With no financial risk involved and a public service rationale attached, NBC gave the producer a green light. When Sugarman was shopping for acts, his friend, impresario, Jerry Weintraub, sold him on John Denver, then a wholesome, folky type who had yet to become a multi-platinum star. Sugarman had never heard of Denver, but sensed the singer would allay NBC's concerns about druggy rock stars and made him the host of the pilot. He seemed like a clean-cut guy who would show up, Sugarman recalled. Once the Midnight Special was on track, Sugarman got the support of Carson, who was his neighbor and regular tennis partner in Beverly Hills. The Tonight host wasn't a fan of rock music, but he liked the idea of having a program to follow him at 1 a.m., as it would keep viewers tuned in through the end of his show, which ran 90 minutes at the time. Carson plugged the Midnight Special on the air before its launch. The pilot episode aired on August the 19th, 1972, with Denver presenting a lineup that included Ronstadt, producer, Mama Cass, the Everly Brothers, David Clayton Thomas, and the Isley Brothers. The producer, a hunches that a people would watch, was correct. About 6 million viewers tuned in to the pilot, and NBC picked up the Midnight Special as a 90-minute weekly series. Record companies would see a sales lift the weekend after their acts appeared on the program. Not only did the labels say yes, they always made sure the artist made it to the studio on time. Starting in the program's second season, NBC lined up FM stations across the country to simulcast the Midnight Special so viewers could listen on their stereo systems rather than a small mono speaker on a TV set. They used Wolfman Jack, who was authentic. He helped ground it. Those sound stages were wonderful, and they did good mixes. The Midnight Special ended in 1981, but the producer, who went on to earn an Oscar nomination for making Children of a Lesser God, kept the rights to the show. Sugarman transferred the 2-inch tape masters to 1-inch tape as the technology changed, and later converted them to digital files, keeping them in pristine condition over the decades. Sugarman had previously made clips available to artists who requested them for their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions, and pirated copies have long showed up online, but his YouTube channel is the first authorized online presentation of the shows that will reach a generation of viewers who grew up with on-demand streaming. They will never know what it was like to stay up late and get a glimpse of their favorite artists perform on TV. My 31-year-old son still doesn't get it, said Sugarman.
We were good, we were cold, kind of dream that can't be sold. We were right till we weren't. Built a home and watched it burn.
Miley Cyrus's Flowers introduces this review of Miley Cyrus's new album, Endless Summer Vacation, where it's given 3 out of a possible 4 stars, and it's published in The Week magazine March 24th, 2023. Miley Cyrus seems determined to be an adult, says Izzy Ample in BuzzFeed News. The child star turned tabloid staple, turned pop icon, has frequently rebranded herself over the past decade, most winningly in 2020 when she pivoted to 80s-inspired rock. Now 30, the undeniably talented vocalist has finally allowed herself the freedom to present different musical styles and different facets of herself on the same album. Unfortunately, the album's mix of vaguely retro, radio-friendly pop music only reinforces the sense that Cyrus doesn't quite know how she wants to sound. But think of Endless Summer Vacation as a pop convenience store, says Chris Willman in Variety. There's so much to like here, beginning with the hit single Flowers, the song playing in the background now. The album's first half leans wistful. The more dynamic second half perks up with Nobody Excitable synth pop before Cyrus concludes with a couple of piano ballads. It's one of her most enjoyable albums, offering a nice selection of easily digestible fare rather than another conscious reinvention. how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what was the name of the first father-daughter song to hit number one on the U.S. singles chart? Was it A, Handprints on the Wall? Well, actually, this was a 2003 tune by Kenny Rogers, who recalls watching his daughter grow up and seeing some of her firsts. He talks about how happy he was when she was born and how she could stay young forever and he wouldn't mind if she had left handprints on the wall as a reminder of all the good times when she was a little one. But he never recorded this song with his daughter. Was it B, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? Well, this 1953 song was sung by Patti Page, but did not include her father in the recording. Well, then, how about C, Hello, Mudda, Hello, Fada? Well, this 1963 Alan Sherman novelty song about having to spend the summer at Camp Granada, but he didn't record the song with his offspring. Okay, then it must be D, Something Stupid. Yes, this 1967 hit was the first father-daughter song to hit number one on the U.S. singles chart. It was sung by Frank and Nancy Sinatra. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1980 that a New Jersey state assemblyman introduced a resolution to make a Bruce Springsteen song the official state song of New Jersey. Name of that song? A, Dancing in the Dark? No. This 1984 peaked at number two in the U.S., but was not mentioned as a state song. As noted in SongFacts.com, Springsteen wrote Dancing in the Dark about his difficulty writing a hit single and his frustration trying to write songs that will please people. His struggles pour out in the lyric where he feels like a hired gun dying for some action. He even addresses an industry trope where he surely heard many times before. They say you gotta stay hungry. Hey, baby, I'm just about starving tonight. Ironically, the song was a hit single, the biggest of his career in terms of U.S. chart position. Well, then how about answer B, Born in the USA? Well, this 1984 song peaked at number nine in the USA, but it was not advanced as a state song. SongFacts.com notes that this song is often misinterpreted as a full-throated patriotic anthem, but Born in the USA is about the problems Vietnam veterans faced when they returned to America. While veterans of other wars received heroes' welcomes, those who fought in Vietnam were mostly ignored when they returned to their homeland, and many suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. Springsteen said, in my songs, the spiritual part, the hope part, is in the choruses. The blues and your daily realities are in the details of the verses. The spiritual comes out in the choruses, which I got from gospel music and the church. Well, then, how about answer C, my hometown? Nah, this 1986 song did peak at number six in the U.S., but it was not considered for a state song. As noted in SongFacts.com, this song is about Springsteen's experiences growing up in Freehold, New Jersey, his hometown. He doesn't say nice things about Freehold. The lyrics are a bleak portrait of life for the working class during the Reagan era, as many small towns fell apart. It helped earn Springsteen the reputation as a voice for the common man. Well, then the correct answer must again be answer D, yes. Born to Run peaked at number 23 in the USA in 1975, and in 1980, a New Jersey state assemblyman introduced a resolution to make this song the official state song. As noted in SongFacts.com, this song came at a crossroads of Springsteen's career. His first two albums sold poorly, and Columbia Records might have dropped him if he did not produce a hit. Born to Run captured the spirit of restless youth, yearning to hit the road and live life to the fullest. Springsteen wrote the lyrics in his Long Branch, New Jersey home in early 1974. One day I was playing my guitar on the edge of the bed, working on some song ideas, and the words, Born to Run, came to me, he recalled. As he explained in a 2005 interview with National Public Radio, Born to Run was the song of my youth. Now I have to write something else. I became attracted to country music and older blues and folk because they bring the same intensity to adult issues and adult problems. And I thought, if this is a lifetime job for me, I need to write songs I can sing at that great advanced age of 40 years old. One of the most emotional performances of this song came at the Spectrum in Philadelphia on December the 9th, 1980, the night after John Lennon was shot and killed. Springsteen opened the show by saying, "If it wasn't for John Lennon, a lot of us would be someplace much different tonight. It's a hard world that asks you to live with a lot of the things that are unlivable. And it's hard to come out here and play tonight, but there's nothing else to do." The band then launched into Born to Run in a kind of catharsis. Stevie Van Zandt had tears in his eyes, and Danny Federici hit his keyboard so hard he broke a key. Springsteen closed that concert with Twist and Shout as a tribute to Lennon. So let's close out today's program with the Springsteen tune that charted the highest in the U.S. charts, Dancing in the Dark, which peaked at number 2 in 1984. And I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired. Man, I'm just tired and bored with myself. Hey there, baby, I could use just a little help. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's behind. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.